the Ninja Rob Podcast with Marco Perazzo and Tim Carpenter. The podcast for the true martial artist.
Yeah, I always like it better when you start it off.
It's always better when I start it off.
I know. That's why I like it better.
Well, so do the fans.
So I'm going to pass it over to JB.
No, thank you.
I think he's still reeling from the pre-recorded beef.
I'm like, no.
I'm not even going to ask.
Yeah, I'll let you run it. Yeah,
because I'll get to your question in a second.
Sure.
What we should do is we should record everything that we do before we actually record.
And talk about that?
No, and then we could release those clips one day when we don't feel like actually doing when a podcast.
But then we do a Patreon and say, if you want to get the behind the scenes arguments.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
There you go.
$1 a minute.
$1.
Well, how much?
Stuff is gold.
How much on here?
How much? Yeah, that's true. How much is we could ask JB, I'm sure knows. What's an ounce of gold right now?
I've never trained football players.
Wow. So there's a call back to pre-hit the record button.
No, but what's an ounce of gold?
Let me just make sure I got everything. I did everything you asked me to do.
Yeah.
All right, so we all watched the Ferguson fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did, but
you know what? Change of plans.
Oh.
Let's do questions first.
He's mixing it up.
Hey. You know, he's running the show, just so everybody knows. Tim Carpenter produced show today.
Yeah, so what you're getting today is you're getting authenticity. You're not getting somebody doing an impersonation of Johnny Carson.
1881, guys.
That's how much gold?
1881?
Gold is 18.
Yeah, I looked that up, sir. I let that for you.
Impersonation.
Sir.
Who was impersonating Johnny Carson?
You.
That's the highest form of compliment that I could ever receive.
Bro.
You're welcome.
You know how many times he was divorced?
How many?
I don't know. Quite a few.
That's what you're after?
Success.
No. Last week, we were talking about how much we love our wives. Now we're talking about divorce.
Oh, yeah. What's it was the love on? Cast last week?
Yeah.
Love cast.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, love cast.
Yeah, it was.
All right. Right.
Do,
so you talked about what is it? Can you?
We just said.
You said you love
best
yours?
Qualities.
Our wives' best qualities.
Yeah. What is that?
Because we had leading to.
You got to be in love with a woman.
My car got towed and booted, and I had 22 tickets. So. My wife's car, so I had to.
That was your fault.
Exactly.
They got her. They said, "All right, we can't get him. We're gonna get his." That's how they. That's how the police do you too. They watch your baby mom and your mom because they know you gonna go back to one of them. So they got your wife.
So you want me
to
mess
with your family? The authorities.
Let's go to the questions.
All right, first question I have is from Clay Bucci. He says, "Thoughts on women's only BJJ class feels like a disservice for self-defense." So I've always had some thoughts on that, but since you're running the show, I'll let you lead. What's going on?
Well, normally, when you run the show, you pass it to me first. So I'm passing it to you.
Passing it back. Yeah. Ping pong. Rebound. Yeah. All right.
So the question is, what do we think about BJJ classes for women?
For women. So I've always been...
Women-only class.
Women-only class, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that there sometimes is an undercurrent at jiu-jitsu academies, dojos. I don't like calling them gyms. I think gyms is a disservice. Right? Anybody can open a gym. Not everyone can open a dojo. Anyway, so women only is because there may be a culture at the school that isn't open to women training or training with men or being treated as equals or equal training partners. So sometimes you get that feeling at a school and some of the women at the school feel like, hey, you know what? We'd like to have this separate class. This is just my assumption.
Or women are getting beat up at the class by dudes.
Could be part of it, right? Could be part of it.
Not in the house.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends on not necessarily at any of our schools, but
not at ours, but at others. I had to
intervene one time with a guy that was, I would say, taking liberties with one of the girls and just going entirely too hard, and then I did the same exact thing to him that he was doing to one of the girls, and he didn't like it one bit. And I go, well, how do you think she feels? Are you doing the same exact thing? I was like, you know, like as much as this is about fighting and self-defense, you know, we can't, if you're either bigger, faster, stronger, better, whatever, you can't take advantage of that situation. And you know, this dude wound up having other issues, but I digress. I don't think they're good for a complete culture of a school. I think that a school should have the ability to have everybody in the same class. I used to think that it even wasn't appropriate for women that compete in BJJ But I've changed my mind on that. I think women who compete in BJJ should train with other women to feel the same physicality that they would feel in the competitive cycle. My argument for women's only self-defense against it is most of, you know, my big fear would be a woman being attacked by a man, not a woman being attacked by another woman, right? So if she's already doing jiu-jitsu, she doesn't need to train how to beat up other girls on the street. She's got that covered, right? What she needs to be able to do is be able to handle a big, strong, fast guy that is trying to attack her. So I always see like people want to do them, and they never seem to be like a success anyway. See, a lot of places have tried to do women-only classes. So yeah, there's my feelings. I understand the sentiment. I think we have to take a step back from what that sentiment is and look at the school culture and say, well, why do the people or the women at this school feel like they need their own class, right? Like, is it not something good enough going on at the school? Because I'm not a fan of separating anybody from anything, right? Because then if we just have women-only class, then we're going to have under 30 class, under 40. The 200-pounders are only going to go with the 200-pounders, you know, so forth and so on.
I pretty much agree. I think women's-only stuff is it's like a waste of time. Women, I think it's important for women to actually train with other women, like in order to get a feeling for like, so they can go 100%, the other girl can go 100%, so they can experience that. Because almost all the time when it's a guy going with a girl, the guy has to regulate his intensity, you know? So, yeah, I think it's important for women to train with women, but women's only stuff is, it's just a waste of time. And it's, we did a women's only open mat at an old gym that I taught at, and it just devolved into a bake sale. Like, I would go in there sometimes.
Come on.
I mean, no, I would go in there sometimes, and there would be like two girls training and then a bunch of girls sitting around the mat. And this was like a half hour into it. There was cookies and, you know, like baked goods.
They would like all men naturally. We just really come there because we just want
to
fight.
We don't go there to, the socialization is a part of it, but it comes,
plenty of schools
it comes
hang out after.
Yeah. But that's like, you do that after you train hard. You don't even really talk before training. Then you talk afterwards. This was like socialization, chowing down on cookies.
It's like women at the gym a lot of times. You see women in the gym, it's a photo shoot.
I think they're more social creatures than we are.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think when we go into open mat on Sundays, usually at your place, it's like you come in, you train, and then you hang out for 6 hours afterwards.
Exactly.
Talk.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way it should be, you know?
Yeah, so we had a years ago at...
You got kicked out of your own.
So they asked if they could use my facility to run a women's only open mat. And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And then they told me I had to leave. And I go, I'm not fucking leaving. I go, you can have the space. I go, but, you know, what is it, some sort of secret society?
It's like once it started, or they told you that when upon the first discussion?
No, upon like getting there. It's like, oh, you know, Marco, we'd appreciate it if you left. And I was like, not happening. Yeah, it was very odd, you know, because like you offer the space and like, hey, you guys can come in, do your thing. You'll be training under my insurance. Here's my waiver. Do your thing. And I think that's kind of cool where every once in a while where it's like, hey, man, like if we did an old school Maxercise open mat one day. All right. If you train to Maxercise between these years, let's meet at this school. And it's only those people.
That's
it's
a
like,
great idea.
Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, those guys from that era, right? Where it's like, here's a bunch of girls that know each other. And they want to do a specific open mat. Awesome, man. You know, it's just like a bunch of friends getting together for drinks or what have you. But to ask me to leave, nah,
By the way, whenever you guys talk about Maxercise without knowing it, the name Maxercise sounds like some bullshit DVD series, like a Taibo, It sounds like that. Like I see like some dude in tights.
Yeah,
Let's go.
There used to be a cartoon on the wall. Of who was the getting sand kicked in the face? What was the old school
Charles
thing?
Atlas.
Charles Atlas. Yeah. But it was the owner, Steve Maxwell, getting sand kicked in his face and then coming back all buff and, you know, like Maxercise. It was all very interesting. Yeah. How about you, JB? What are your thoughts on women? Now, is that in karate, is that more common, less common, or does it matter?
In my experience, it doesn't matter. We train together, but I have experienced classes. We went up to NYU to do a self-defense class, and all the girls happened to be Muslim. So I was just brought in as an uke, and after I got my ass kicked, they asked me to leave. I went to go get lunch, and they trained together. Now, the separation is because of their religion.
Right.
So that's why they did that. But I don't have an
was
issue.
Was there a secondary effect?
No, just a, the first dairy was getting my ass kicked, and then secondarily, I went to lunch. I walked through NYU, which was amazing.
Can you tell everybody this?
Not yet, not yet.
All right, okay.
Not yet. Right. So, but, you know, I don't have a problem with it. If they want to get together and do what they want to do, like, it's okay. It, you know, go ahead, do what you want to do. Go ahead. If it doesn't, listen, train the way you want to train.
Do what you want to do at your own school.
If it don't
work
out.
Find a building, pay the rent,
if it doesn't work out. But
grow the student base and then run a women's only class.
I got you. So I also thought of it as you guys were going talking about it, as if it's a way to bring new people in, then it's a way to bring new people into the sport.
And that's always
hopefully they'll understand it. Like, okay, there's something I want to try something different.
Something's missing.
Right. There's always a hook, right?
I would say, you know, all right, so let me go see how effective this is on guys. Because the thing about jiu-jitsu is that, you know, there's the small adjustments. Like, if you're using it live, you know, there's these small adjustments. Things don't work exactly the way they work on the mat.
So I agree that if we could get more women to do jiu-jitsu, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But why? This would be better for business. The more people you have in your – the more right people you have in your dojo, the better off your dojo is going to be.
And the more fans for the bigger sport of it and everything like that. The more you understand the sport, the more people will watch it, like we talked about.
But you'll see like a comparably enrolled Muay Thai school versus a comparably enrolled jiu-jitsu school. And the mix at a Muay Thai school might be 60-40, 45-55 as I'm doing the math. In a jiu-jitsu school, man, it's 90-10.
Not even 10.
I'm being generous.
Yeah,
you know. So what? You know, and Muay Thai is a much different art, but equally as difficult as jiu-jitsu to learn and to master. What do you kind of? Oh, fuck! I'm taking the show. Why am I doing your job?
You're not. You're just fucking bloviating.
What evading?
Look it up.
All right.
You asking me a question now about Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu?
Well, so my question to you, since you're running the show, apparently, is why the difference if a Muay Thai school can get 50-50 and a jiu-jitsu school can do 95-5?
Most of the time in Muay Thai, you're not, you know, grinding your sweaty armpits into somebody's face.
Exactly.
You're not, you know, I mean, even most Muay Thai schools don't even really do clinch that much, so women aren't getting the same sort of
resistance.
Like,
it's not a strength battle against anybody. They're throwing combinations.
Yeah. And there's more people interested, I think, in striking than there are in grappling in general because it's easier, you know? Especially because you don't have to, you can think you know how to fight. You can train striking for years and never actually get hit. You can look amazing on pads and bags and doing demonstrations, but in jiu-jitsu, you have to get kind of rough.
You have
up.
To use it. You have to implement what you learn. Yeah. In real life. Yeah.
You just got to, you can avoid sparring in a lot of striking arts. And I'm saying not to become like a professional or very proficient at it, but I'm sure you know from karate, you can go through karate for 20 years and never be in a real fight.
I've never trained football players.
Hey, what was that?
That's the name of this episode.
Right, right.
It's going to be.
Can I?
What's up?
You mind if I say something?
Yes. So moving on.
Wow. I'm okay with that.
Way to take the reins.
Oh,
so I was going to ask Devin, what do you think it would take to get your lady to do jiu-jitsu?
She would do it.
Okay.
She would do it. My girl wishes that she could be, she would have wanted to be like a fighter, like a UFC fighter.
It's not too late.
No, my girl has a brain issue. She has epilepsy, so she can't do anything with like head striking and stuff like that. But my girl is a profoundly known Camden Street Fighter. Her
heavy hands, apparently.
I'll let you find out, bro.
You told us. Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
I promise you. I think it's a shoulder build thing because my girl does have wide shoulders. I start looking at people like Amanda Nunes. That's her favorite fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, man. Small turn, not that much impact on, like not that much like space, and it's solid, dog. Good, it's bad. She definitely's a rumbler.
Yo, you know you can get help for that, bro. If you need to. So
what? What you mean?
There's places for
abused boyfriends. Yeah,
you
know,
you don't have to take that.
That's not what's happening.
No, I didn't say that. We're not accusing you of anything.
You feel safe.
Space.
It's okay.
It's okay. It's not your fault.
The way you describe it's not. The way you describe that hook, man, I saw you laying on the ground for about 45 minutes.
Nah, bro, it's not.
But when you got up, you know what it was? There was steak, rice, and beans for you. I know that's what happened. But this is a safe space, man. Yo. Talk to Tim about it. He's trained football players. He knows what he's doing. Yo, so one time this lady walked into the school and wanted, she was from, I think she was Syrian, and she thought we were teaching Shotokan. And she was like, is this like Shotokan? And I had to explain it to her that it wasn't Shotokan. So I had no way to tell her how it was. It was just me and her. And I kept saying, this is more intimate. So then I went into the back and I grabbed, you ever see the magazine? I don't know if it's like Buchecha or something. These two dudes in their little shorts and one has the other in a triangle and it looks like, if they were naked, it'd be gay porn.
Right.
But I was like, it's like this. She goes, oh, no, my husband would not. He would forbid it. I was like, all right, because I didn't want her to get, you know, I didn't know where she was from. And I didn't want her to get hurt because I didn't want her. I didn't want, you know, Dev, you know what it is. I don't want to see her get hurt.
What do you mean? How would she get hurt?
Who would hurt her? I was just saying domestic abuse.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't know the situation that her.
Why does that have? What does domestic abuse have to do with where she's from?
I just didn't know what I'm saying.
It's like three layers of racism coming out here.
I didn't know her or the dynamic in her home. That's what I meant about that. Like, that's
what you said because you didn't know where she was from.
Well, yeah, like I don't know what.
But then you said she was Syrian. Is there something about Syrians?
She might be Syrian. I'm not sure. So where she? I said she was serious. Anyway, did I say Syrian? Did it sound like Syrian? Oh, serious.
That's how you confuse.
Anyway, sorry.
White man wordplay.
So, but it was to show her that, and I think, don't you think women could have an issue with, like,
the
proximity?
Physical closeness?
Because I think that's the point you were making with the writing.
You just said it better than I did.
Well, there's no way I can do that.
Thank you.
You went to college, didn't you?
For a little bit.
There you go.
Do you want me to go on to the next question?
Yeah, next question, please.
Next question.
This is from Matt, aka Dundee. He goes, "What are the primary differences between traditional jiu-jitsu and Brazilian jiu-jitsu?" So, oddly enough, I did not know till today, because I'd never really looked into traditional Japanese jiu-jitsu. But I'm going to let you...
No.
No?
You guys are the ones that told me, oh, yeah, they had swords and shit. It was fine.
Well, so if I...
So it depends on what he means by traditional jiu-jitsu. If by traditional he means the unarmed form of combat that samurais would use back in that era...
I believe that's what he's asking about.
You know... Unfortunately, we don't really know too much about that time period. We haven't seen it being
There's
used.
Historical records of most things that have occurred. So we
know a little bit.
We know plenty,
But so from what I've seen of like what would be considered more traditional jiu-jitsu schools, it's a lot of like wrist locks. It's not so much grappling on the ground. It's a lot of like standing grappling as far as like disarming people, twisting their arm behind their back.
So if I had to answer this question in a much better way, I will. It looked to me from what I saw, and oddly, even though they say the phones don't listen, I got a thing on Facebook about that. It was literally like the difference between traditional jiu-jitsu versus Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like a link to an article, and I watched it. Was watching this one guy explain it. Seemed like he had some history on it. So if his explanation is correct, what I gleaned from it was mixed martial arts without mixing the arts. So they would practice stand-up fighting. They would practice ground fighting. They would practice self-defense, right? So it was almost as if you had three schools in one, but at no point did these techniques really ever overlap, right? Where they didn't become experts in striking or how to go from striking to groundwork, right? Or how to go from groundwork back to striking and that kind of thing. So there was... striking techniques that are taught in Japanese jiu-jitsu. There are grappling techniques that are taught. You'll see throws and takedowns, and they use the judo nomenclature, and then or the Japanese words, I guess, or nomenclature. And then the last part is the self-defense techniques. And this explanation that I was listening to was the huge difference between Brazilian jiu-jitsu and traditional Japanese jiu-jitsu is the focus on the expertise in groundwork and not doing the other aspects of the art. and groundwork and grappling. And if you're doing Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, then you're doing self-defense and grappling. So if you, and I've never walked into a Japanese Jiu-Jitsu school, but it sounded like, hey, we're going to do striking, we're going to do grappling, we're going to do self-defense, but at no point do any of them come in, become mixed martial arts. They're their own kind of separate things. Like,
it's multiple martial arts, not mixed martial
arts. Yeah, yeah, because like a stand-up fight seems to stay a stand-up fight. A grappling fight doesn't become a striking fight. So that's what I got.
So is it like a kid's class?
Would you?
No.
No.
It's the way I usually, when I try to describe where jiu-jitsu came from or the difference between the two, is that, yeah, Japanese jiu-jitsu became judo. Judo became Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So Kano took the techniques of judo and made a sport out of it. Took the techniques of jiu-jitsu, the old techniques of jiu-jitsu, and made a sport out of it. The Gracies learned from judo guys that went to Japan, went to Brazil, and they made it more, they took the sport and made it back into fighting. That's the way I like to look at it.
I was under the impression, and I don't know where I read this or heard the story, that the thing was that, like you said, so at one point, it wasn't called judo, it was called Kano Jiu-Jitsu, correct? So before
not,
it was
not from that, might have been like his original school.
Originally, right. So then it turned, then it went, so it that was the name, you know, they just called it all.
That
it
might still, have been his jiu-jitsu school.
It was still under the jiu-jitsu banner. And then when his guy, the guy what's the Japanese dude that came in to teach the Gracie family?
Maeda,
that he was an expert in the Neiwaza, which I believe is the groundwork. And when he came here, when he went to Brazil and got with the Gracies, that since that was his level of expertise, that's what he trained them in. That's what they became more proficient. And then they, of course, made changes to it, adapted it to their body types and also to the sports that they were doing, being actual live fighting, you know, Vale Tudo. So that's the story I would generally tell people on how it transitioned from one to the next.
There's actually, have you seen any, Robert Drysdale wrote a book?
I have the book.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it good? Have you read it?
I'm piecing through it. I'm not.
It's basically a whole new.
Yes and no. I think he's trying to take a level approach to, is the history that the Gracies tell us about their introduction into jiu-jitsu accurate?
Like a week ago.
Yeah. Or not. And then he talks to other. What you used the term the other day, when things evolved to get parallel evolution. So these other jiu-jitsus in Brazil evolved in parallel with the Gracies, mm-hmm. right? But outside of their right. influence. And a lot of people are saying that they may not have even learned from Maeda, that might have been kind of made up. There's some argument.
They've
there.
Done a good job controlling the narrative, perhaps.
For sure.
But also, it's like anything else. It's rarely the, not necessarily the best or most qualified person that rises to the top. It's a lot of times it's who is the best at talking about themselves.
You right. Know what
and,
I mean?
And or marketing themselves. And you could look at them fighting as a way of them marketing their jiu-jitsu.
Look, and they won. Right, yeah. And they get the right yeah. to history, and then right, something right. my dad always taught me is the winners write the history books, right? Right. And they won, and they got to say the story the way because you'll even see within their family. I think it's the Birth of Vale Tudo is the documentary mm-hmm. where the Carlos side, like Henzo and Hayan and those guys, will say, "Yeah, it's not necessarily true." Some of these things that Horian side is saying is true.
Yeah,
you know, so they're just as privy to that stuff, but. The question, to go back to Matt's question, is the difference between the two, the way I saw it, you know, there's a belt difference, and they didn't, in Japanese jiu-jitsu, it didn't feel like there was ever a sport aspect to it as well, where in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, clearly there's a sport aspect. You said you got a question that came in?
We got a question from Tim Williams.
Oh.
It's about lower back pain. So he said, have we ever had lower back pain, and if so, how do we treat it?
All the time.
Every day.
Yeah.
No, but I have, you've had a similar thing happen where your back kind of like spasms for a week.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm walking around like the hunchback of Notre
crooked.
Dame.
Yeah. So that's what happens to me. And I think we've all had it to a certain extent. We're always from what I have understood through my research on YouTube and what causes this, It's a tight psoas muscle. So it kind of happens from like when you're sitting a lot.
Okay.
Your hip flexors and your psoas muscle gets really tight, so which causes
in
your
the front here.
Yeah, they're like
your riblets.
Okay.
Yeah. So and that causes like spasms in your lower back and just screws you all up. So the way I treat it is I try to stretch my hip flexors a lot, and then I try to strengthen my lower back. So I use the reverse hyper. It's probably the best thing I've ever purchased as far as like sort of like a rehab or prehab kind of.
Did you buy his reverse hyper?
The old one.
Yeah. The old one. Okay.
Yeah. Polar has it.
Okay.
It's, yeah, it's the best piece of machinery. Not so much like it's not like a machine that, you know, gets you big and jacked or anything. It's just like it's purely for like your lower back and I guess your glutes.
In a very like safe way.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like I do it a few times per week. Sometimes I do it like heavy to like strengthen it, and sometimes I just do like light weight and a lot of reps just to like keep the area active and like kind of moving. Because it's a hard area, like your lower back's a weird area to get to with exercises other than deadlifts and stuff like that.
Right. And the same thing.
And
the
deadlifts
strength
are the
is
one that hurts you. Yeah. So
yes,
reverse hyper and stretch your hip flexors.
I do have back issues, and they seem to, it's almost cyclical. Like every 3 to 6 months, I'm like, oh, man, I haven't had a back issue in a while. And one of the things that was super helpful was the foam roller, is foam rolling my hamstrings, that apparently hamstring tightness can lead to lower back issues. And I have a lot of hamstring tightness. So when I stay on top of my hamstring tightness, that was helpful. And we'll kind of push away the low back issue. But one of my students is a chiropractor. And I said, hey, should I come visit you? He goes, no, I'm the wrong guy. He goes, you want to see this other guy in Haddonfield. And the guy does kind of sports recovery. And
Fluck?
No, different guy. Fluck does rolfing and the scraping and the stuff with the needles. What's that called?
Acupuncture.
Acupuncture. Right. So I went to this other guy who is much more like like traditional PT. And he did some work, did some cupping, which I've never had done before. And also gave me exercises to do. And it was the first time that this whole kind of like the foam rolling, but also the exercises that he has me do have really helped because of, I guess, muscular imbalances that I had in my hips that caused the low back issues.
I've also heard our mutual friend of all of ours that I used to go, he was a physical therapist that I used to go to. He said that jiu-jitsu guys, martial artists especially, get extremely overdeveloped and flexible in certain ways. Because we're in the same positions. Like if you think about, a lot of times we're in the guard. So we're always kind of like cramped, and our hip flexors and psoas muscles get so like almost too strong. So they're completely imbalanced with like the rest of your body, which pulls your body all out of whack. And that's why when my back spasms, my whole body is basically like pulled to one, like my hips are pulled to one side. I have to like sort of hunch over a little bit.
Right.
And so I think it's just a function of, overtraining to a certain extent.
Possibly.
Yeah. Or being active just in general. Because, you know, think about all the places you drive to, you're sitting in that position, yeah. Then you're going here, you're doing there. So a little bit of everything. Back problems are just so common in general for,
Does for even, us. Yeah, in like comfort, a sedentary, you know, people, right?
Yeah, because I've done hyper. Sometimes if it hurts, I'll do a couple swings, kettlebell swings. I'll try to do like downward facing dog. What's the other one? Cobra?
Upward facing dog?
Upward facing dog. You know, always trying to do the foam roller, right, all that.
Yeah.
Just trying to get all that to stay stuff in front of it. Yep.
I'll do pretty much anything.
Yeah, if and you I've do nothing, it's only going to make it worse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's definitely true.
Yeah, try it. You got to try everything. Like, I don't know. Like, your back pain could be caused by
years of fighting MMA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or construction.
Maybe yeah. Relax a little bit. Take a day off.
Yeah.
That seems to help sometimes, too.
Right. So, we have an email question. Mm-hmm. Can I read it?
You going to read the whole thing? Again, it was bloviating.
Hey, you wanted questions.
No, let's hear it.
From Danny Pacific. I'll start with a story. It's a breezy Monday. Fall is in the air, and the leaves are starting to change colors. It's competition class day. The session is hard. We sweat. We bleed. We persevere, and fulfillments start to settle in. Fulfillment starts to settle in. The class session has come to an end. We are called to fall in and present ourselves to the instructor. For our closing ceremony, we bow, but confusion starts to creep in as Marco proceeds to take a path towards greeting the purple belts first. and suddenly I'm in the middle of the line, not walking behind my instructor as I fondly remember. What does it mean to be a black belt? What respect is deserved in wearing the coveted piece of cloth around the waist? Is it merely standing at the front of the lines as we present ourselves to the instructor to begin and end class sessions? What is even the front of the line anymore? These have been the very philosophical questions I've asked myself over the past few months. As this trend continues to be the norm, Marco has always considered himself a maverick of jiu-jitsu traditions. Going against the grain and subverting expectation is nothing new inside of our jiu-jitsu social club.
I think he's campaigning for another stripe.
But this one, I feel like, needs to be reconsidered. Please see the diagram below I've done with calculations, and it's the exact same amount of time to start at to what many would consider be the start of the line and the end of the back of the line. So then there's the... So the issue that Dan's talking about is that the new school, the layout's different. So when we bow out and go do the fist bump and everybody fall in the beginning there was, like, I didn't know what side to go to.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to go to the left side, my left, his right.
Where the doors are?
No.
Which side are the doors
on? The windows.
The non-window side.
Non-window.
Yeah, that's the side you should be on.
So no, I'm on the, so the way the school is laid out, my back is to the door. They're all facing me.
Classic mistake. You'd never have your back to a door or a window. As a black belt in jiu-jitsu, you should know this by now. You need to see things coming. You have your back to, like, if I'm here, like, I would never have my back to that door. My back would be to the wall. You never get surprised from behind, man.
You're getting caught up in the weeds here, but go ahead.
I'm just saying, as a general overall approach to life, you'd never put your back to a door or something where you can't see what's coming.
Where do I stand to make sure that my back is not to a door?
Well, a door from outside? Is there doors on the other side?
Well, there's the cement wall.
The cement. You put your back to the cement wall. That's where you go.
Okay.
And they...
So we still have a similar issue, but go ahead. So
after that, it doesn't matter what side.
Okay.
You choose. It's your school.
Thanks.
I think that's...
Bloviating.
Talking about getting into the weeds. He's worried about, like, which end of the line to be on, left or right.
Well, he's
I understand it's equidistant from whether you're on either end. You're
so still here's the problem is that Dan's not seeing it, and this is why I'm a third degree black belt, and he's only got one stripe on his black belt. It's okay. I'm here to help him.
Mm-hmm.
If I go and I start going to the right and I'm fist bumping everybody, then I just stay to my right and go fist bump. But if I go to the left and I start here, then my fist bump is a left-handed fist bump. Not going left-handed fist bump. No can't do it. And I got to do some sort of spin and moonwalk the rest of the way. Not
so this
work.
Is like, you know how you say when somebody tries to describe a technique to you, just show me? this is going to make zero sense in audio terms.
I got you.
But his question was, what does it mean to be a black belt?
What's the diagram? Can I see that?
Which way to go? His diagram is the purple belts and the brown belts.
Looks like a football chart or something.
So
what
I'm going to ask Dan to do is switch sides. Okay. This is how we're gonna do this. So because naturally when you get up to go somewhere, unless the door is to your left, you get up and you naturally go right because most people are right handed. That's just your natural technique, right there. So same thing. So to answer your question, Dan,
that's real.
I'm lost.
I'm like, what the fuck?
Dan, that was a great question.
Great question.
All right, so that was the last of the questions.
Everybody watched the fight, right?
I did.
Not the fight that ended in a draw, the big fight, Ferguson versus
Aldo. No, first of all, can you stop doing that?
Look, I just didn't watch the fight.
He doesn't.
But I did watch the first.
He doesn't come on the Devin Wade show and tell you what to talk about.
Wait, what fight are you talking about? Here's the other thing.
What fight are you talking about?
The Ferguson and Oliveira fight. You watched them.
Well, I watched part one. That's what you sent me.
Oh, it wasn't the whole fight?
No, it was the first two rounds.
Oh, okay.
You had to go out and search the third round.
How did it end?
The same way as the first two.
Oh, okay.
The third round is the same as the first two. More the same, yeah. And there's no use in talking about a draw because basically the fight never happened. You know what I mean? Two guys went in there. They punched each other for a while, and nobody won. Nobody lost. So, like, nothing was settled in that fight. This fight, there's a lot to take out of this fight.
Okay.
All right. And did you watch Ferguson's excuse-making rant?
Yes. Yes, I'm gonna go train with Tony Ferguson.
That's what I didn't. Did you watch? So yo, okay. Me.
So I had to stop, son. I started watching.
You watched a little bit. It's like watching.
He's like, yo, is he? What is?
I mean, he's always been a little bit off, but
a little bit off.
Doing Adderall on his way, doing bumps right after the
most likely
the match.
So what he said, these are the things that he said. He said that Charles Oliveira's jiu-jitsu is like a wet blanket. But he also kind of made a distinction.
He was insulting him when he was saying that.
You think he was insulting?
I think so.
The wet blanket sounds like an insult. But then he said it's a guy that's just very heavy with good pressure that doesn't let you move.
Right.
And he, but
if you look at that whole interview, it's in its entirety.
So he's trying to make the point. He said that Charles Oliveira broke mentally in that fight.
That is the most amazing statement I've ever fucking heard in my life. Yeah.
No, he didn't.
This is what Tony Ferguson
said. Tony Ferguson is saying.
No, he didn't.
His reasoning was that he went, so he said he rushed the armbar and it was an amateur move. He said he should have waited to the third round to do the armbar. But he said when that happened, he said the armbar
was amazing.
And it broke his arm and he couldn't use his arm for the rest of the fight.
And he just didn't quit, which was amazing in itself.
Yeah. And he knew there was short time, but go ahead.
And his arm was useless for the next round and a half. Yeah. He didn't really start using it at all until like a little bit in the third round.
Yeah.
There's no way that Oliveira was broken mentally. It only served.
He was strengthened mentally.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
He knew I can beat you standing up or on the ground.
I can beat you up. I can take you down.
I can take you down whenever I want. You. Yeah,
that's what it looked like the entire time. Like he was in total control.
Let's see.
He's in a
His other thing was, he said he should have waited to the third round to do the armbar. And then he said his whole plan was to hit the Darce from bottom.
Oh, not an Imanari?
No, but that was the other interesting thing is there was no Eddie Bravo,
no mention of that in the post either. Like, so I don't know, maybe he's out with 10th Planet.
Well,
who knows?
Said something in the insane rant that he had. He said, like, props to Coach Eddie.
Okay.
At some point about jiu-jitsu, but one of the things I took from that fight was him saying his plan was to hit the Darce from bottom. Is relying, like, his style is kind of like he relies on tricks and wild, unexpected things to happen in order to help him win.
So from a football terminology, would be everything he gets, like any submission he gets is a Hail Mary.
Yeah, kind of.
That was his plan in this fight, right. Apparently. He's got great jiu-jitsu and great submissions in general. Like
And he's got massive hands for a guy.
And if he can, like, hit a Darce, like, in a second.
And he tried to go for one on this, and he went for like a modified buggy choke.
Right, but that kind of, like the one thing I took away from that fight is that relying on that on a guy that's super focused and great jiu-jitsu is like it's a waste of time to invest your time in those kind of techniques, basically like trick moves.
So then this is an indictment on 10th Planet.
No, because I don't think it's because 10th Planet has a system that they like a definite style. It's not. Like their rubber guard, their half guard stuff is like definitely sort of like systemized and they have that. But I think when you try to make your jiu-jitsu look cool on Instagram and stuff like that, I think relying on those kinds of moves that you see and that you might hit once in a while and you catch people by surprise, if that's your plan, you're most likely going to get fucked up.
What else did you come to realize after watching that?
I took some notes.
Did you realize that... if he would have ever fought Khabib, he would have got fucked up.
So that's and I've heard that a lot, and I often wonder, you know, like A beats B, B fights C, you know,
not
like
this one. Not
so.
In this
case. I can't argue. Yeah. Like I'd like to, but I can't argue because Oliveira kind of showed you that if I could do it, clearly Khabib is going to be better at it. But who's striking? Would you like to have Khabib's or Oliveira's?
I get that.
Right? You know, so then does...
I'll tell you what I would like to have. If I had to build a fighter, I would build Khabib over any other fighter.
Yes.
Because, like, say what you want. Like, what's that? Yes. He's never lost.
Yes.
He's beaten
never lost.
Up, like, he's beating people up on the feet.
Yeah. Yo, what is that?
A good one, man.
But this isn't about Khabib. I think Khabib would have fucked Tony Ferguson. Yeah, after watching this fight, I think Khabib would have fucking destroyed.
He would have really fucked him up, bro.
Yeah.
It would have looked like this with more insult and tough talk.
It would have been a lot more like a more vicious pounding, whereas this was like a positional
because
clinic.
Of Oliveira's striking, does it make it easier for him to get to his wrestling positions than it does for somebody like Khabib, who has gotten a lot better at striking, who is clearly undefeated, never lost, right? And all that stuff. But does his style lend itself to getting in on Tony like Oliveira's style does?
I think so. Yeah. I think, 'cause Tony doesn't have a game plan. He doesn't have takedown defense. He doesn't jab and move. He's just the flurry of activity.
He's faster, better, and he's not trash at the stand-up.
No,
and
when you talk about wet blanket, there's nobody that's a better wet blanket than Khabib.
Steel blanket.
Yeah.
There is no wetter blanket.
Yeah.
And then this is a lot of the stuff that happened in that fight is stuff that I try to talk to my students about. Is like his strategy was completely reactive. Being like, I'm going to defend and try to get a darce if he makes a mistake. So relying on your opponent to make a mistake, rather than forcing
them. Because he harkened back to the old Gracie days. And, you know, he had brought up Hoist Gracie in that 20-minute rant. Right. And, you know, like the OG of jiu-jitsu and just waiting and knowing that the guy's going to make a mistake. You can't do that.
You can do that
three,
maybe
5-minute rounds.
Time limit fight.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But that's not a good strategy in a fight against a top 10 opponent.
Because we even saw when Hoist fought Sakuraba. And when you throw breaks in there, it just changes everything,
mm-hmm.
right? You could just do unlimited rounds, which is unlimited time, but with breaks in between,
and also,
it changes the flow.
The second time?
The first time.
That strategy doesn't work against a guy with good jiu-jitsu. So, like, when you try to just play a defensive game against a guy that has good jiu-jitsu, it just gives him the ability to attack you nonstop. And eventually, he'll open up something. So, like, Hoist Gracie could use that on Dan Severn, who was a big wrestler that didn't understand what was going on.
Who is Ferguson now? And I've watched a couple of his fights, but most of the guys I've watched him beat the crap out of weren't high level jiu-jitsu guys. And I really don't know how high level of a jiu-jitsu guy Charles Oliveira is, like in traditional jiu-jitsu.
I don't know about that either. He's got more submissions than anybody else in the UFC.
Well, that's all. Then I mean, that's all you need to know. But who has a Tony Ferguson beat on the ground that you were like, man, this is going to be a good test on the ground for Tony?
Yeah, he hasn't so much been in a lot of like drawn out grappling fights. He's beaten really good jiu-jitsu guys, but he beat him like he beat Dos Anjos, but he beat him by decision, and it was it was mostly on the feet, I think.
Okay.
You know, so there wasn't a ton of grappling in that fight.
So is it that his jiu-jitsu is that good, or he's really that opportunistic when he sees it, that Hail Mary's there, he's able to clamp on it and make it work?
I think it's exactly what you said. He's not in a jiu-jitsu match. I don't think he would do great against a lot of high level guys. He's got great submissions, but again, his style is all based off kind of nonsense, like trying to hit.
Again, an indictment on 10th Planet.
No, it's an indictment on Tony Ferguson.
Do you think that's a mechanism of him knowing that he's just like a tough, he's tough,
yes,
and he's good at,
he's relying on his toughness.
Do you think that's the same as Anthony Pettis? It's the same?
What?
Like that they're thing relies on like stunts and shit like that.
No,
like,
Pettis has got technique behind everything he does. Like he has like a strategy. When he fought Wonder Boy and he knocked him out, mm-hmm. like he said, he's like, my strategy was get him to come in so I could hit him.
Superman punch, was it?
Something like that. Yeah. It was just a big. Yeah. I don't know if it was actual Superman, but yeah. Even though Pettis has a lot of flashy things,
like that's what.
But
I'm
Ferguson
like
relies like Ferguson relies on just like a chaotic like scramble and like okay. like a wild, like he wants like a dirty fight, as opposed to like what Oliveira did was just control him no matter where the fight went, you know.
Yeah, and Ferguson couldn't get into any of his jiu-jitsu, and I saw one thing that occurred in that fight that I was like, man, that was fucking awesome. And DC even pointed it out, I believe it was in the first round, and is the way that Oliveira used his foot to not lose position when he was mounted, and then Ferguson went to roll and Oliveira placed his foot in a certain way on a grapevine that just kind of like just shut everything down.
It was in like a butterfly half guard position and he grapevined the opposite leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was super like that's Oliveira's jiu-jitsu was, he's always been good at submissions, but his positional control was like, I thought was incredible.
Yeah. I thought it was a really good fight, and I was glad to see that the referee allowed them to stay on the ground for a bit. Mm-hmm. When it was a little more static, he would come over and tell them to move, but he wouldn't stand them up. And that's likely a function of being in an empty studio as opposed to being in a place
that's
with a big crowd.
Fact. Yeah. People start, boo, referee, what the fuck?
So Tony's
And he's insane.
Oh yeah, he's insane. So it's kind of weird to try to say like, well, why didn't you do this? Well, it's like, because it all boils down to just like he's crazy and he doesn't.
And even in when he fought Gaethje and his coach is like, oh, it might be time to pull out the Imanari.
Yeah.
You know, you when you need to pull out and you do an Imanari roll, you don't strategize an Imanari roll.
Yeah. And then I saw, so there's a couple cool pictures of Tony getting his arm snapped and Oliveira's feet are crossed. And there's people in the comments saying that the reason he didn't finish it was because his feet
were
crossed.
They don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Clearly. But that goes back to one of the things we were talking about last week about like the overall principles in jiu-jitsu and stuff. And that's one that's been around forever is like don't cross your feet when you go for an armbar.
Don't cross your feet. Like, don't cross your feet if you don't have the, the other arm or shoulder captured. Yes, I agree.
So I remember when I first, back at Maxercise, there was a seminar with Hoist and he said, never cross your feet.
He's wrong.
And then Holker came.
Sorry, Hoist.
Holker came like a couple months later and said, always cross your feet. And they never made a distinction about
and he's
the
wrong
arm.
Too. You don't always cross
right,
your feet.
Right, yeah. So.
Sorry, Holker.
And you can, I mean, you can cross your feet in any position as long as you know, as long as you understand the position and right. understand what's going on. I think things like that, like the crossing your feet thing, even on the back, people would always tell you never cross your feet when you're on your back. It's one of the best ways to control somebody is to cross your feet on the back.
If you're positioned, if you have the correct position for it.
I think just if you're aware of what can happen, you can.
Well, people doing that have gave me some wins that I shouldn't have.
Right.
In the dojo.
But again, also, that's a trick you can't rely on.
Right.
I started relying on it. I started giving people so my back when I was tired.
This is the problem with some of those moves is they're like they're very alluring because you think like once you hit it you're like oh this is it this is all I got to do
yeah
I just let people take my back and I can win every round that right. way
I started doing that because I started doing it when I knew I was like I'm done like I'm fucked
right
because then you got a guy like Dom who's got like basically that's one of his highest percentage things he can do but he doesn't even care if you cross your feet.
No,
he's figured out a way to
if you take his back, he could footlock
to like weaponize you taking his back.
Yeah.
But he doesn't rely. He's not waiting for what you do. He's
hold on. That's the Italian.
Yeah, you did
the logo for.
So he like he. It's a lot different than doing something like waiting for a Darce choke to happen.
Yeah.
It's he'll give you his back because he knows you're gonna put his foot in a certain position.
Because we're all programmed to put.
And
our
he'll
feet there.
Or and if you don't, he'll put it there. He'll pull your hook in and put it there. Just so he can get the move.
Yeah, he and I have a gentlemanly agreement on this move where I don't punch him in the face with a cross face to prevent it, and he doesn't go for it so that we can stay friends.
Because it was done to me on the first guy that, like, I thought I was about to get my first victory over the first guy that was training me, and out of nowhere, I was in the most pain ever in my life and letting and tapped out, and then he told me don't cross my feet.
And here's the other, that's a... A lot of those moves are training moves. So that's like somebody will tap to that in training, in a fight, and they have your back, they're not going to tap to that 99% of the time. Like they'll let their ankle break so they can finish the choke or maintain
position.
It caught
me off guard. I didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But I think that, you know, like the way jiu-jitsu has been pushing lately, because, you know, the old school mentality was you never cross your feet. Mm-hmm. And now you can cross your feet. I don't necessarily agree with Tim. You could put them anywhere, but there's proper positioning for it crossed, whereas it's almost zero likelihood that that technique that was used on you would work, right? If you're crossed in front.
What is that called? I call it the kid in play.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
I don't know if it has a name.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What do you want to name it?
Kid in play.
Because you know they used to jump over, you have to pull your leg up to jump over the leg.
Yeah.
So basically, I used to do that kid in play dance, so I would pull my leg up, and next thing you know, I'm breaking feet.
Kid and play.
Kid and play. There it is. Go for the kid and play.
Yeah. A high top feed. How about that?
That's better. That's got better ring to it.
Yeah, it does.
Peace.
Tim and I would like to thank our sound engineer and studio owner, Devin Wade, for always doing a great job with the sound, but also the beautiful facility that we get to use here at SFX Studios.
would also like to thank Eddie Lynn, who takes and donates his time to the podcast to do all the video editing and everything you see on our social media. So really appreciate that from Eddie Lynn. And we'd also like to thank our friend Ralphie Darden, aka DJ Major Taylor, who gave us the original music that we use. So you're welcome, Tim.
For and almost me. Just as importantly as everybody else that he mentioned, we would like to thank all of our listeners that submitted questions.
This is the Ninja Rock Podcast with Marco Perazzo and Tim Carpenter, the podcast for the true martial artist. We'll be right back.